You're listening to Trek FM.
Want to join in the conversation and share your thoughts on this episode? Join the Babel Conference, our listeners' discussion group on Facebook. Just type B-A-B-E-L into the Facebook search field, and we look forward to seeing you there.
This is Steve Sansweet of Rancho Obi-Wan, and you're listening to the 602 Club.
Well, hello and welcome to the 602 Club, TFM's local watering hole for all things outside of Star Trek. And I am just one of the hosts here, Matthew Rushing, and I'm so excited that back with me is none other than intrepid reporter Karen Page. I mean, Christy Morris.
Oh, thank you so much. I mean, I do fancy myself a detective and love digging up a good scoop. So really excited to share this one with you, and you'll hear this all first.
Oh, fantastic. I'm so glad. Well, I'm glad we're getting the exclusive. We are continuing with Marvel, but we are going back here in the MCU pretty far because it's been a while since this episode. It's been a while since this season came out. In fact, 2018 is when this season dropped. And so we're going to be diving into Daredevil Season 3, especially as we know that Daredevil Born Again, the series, is going to be coming out in Disney Plus. But before we get to all of that, we do always appreciate everyone who's listening. Thank you so much for making the time to see what's going on here at the 602 Club and on the network. We really just a huge thank you to all of you that listen and support the show. It's said a lot, but one of the best ways to help out a show is by giving ratings and reviews on platforms like Apple Podcasts or Spotify. Makes a big difference. So go over there, give us a rating and a star review. That'll really help. Give us a written review. That makes a huge difference. You can also follow us over on social media. So like on X, Twitter, you'll find us at the 602 Club. A great way to also help the show is to share the show by, you know, retweeting or any of those type of things. You can also find us on Instagram at the 602 Club TFM. You can also find us online with the entire network at trek.fm, plus we're on Facebook at facebook.com/thetrekfm. Also, you can check us out on Facebook on our listeners-only discussion group called the Babel Conference, and there's listeners from all over the world there talking about the different shows you can join. And you can go to Patreon at patreon.com/trekfm and become part of the team and just make sure that everything that's going on here can keep happening. So, Christy, obviously it has been a long time since we have, you know, been in the Netflix Marvel world. In fact, previously on Netflix Marvel, when this show picks up, we're actually coming straight off the series The Defenders, because that's mm-hmm. where the story picks up for Matt Murdock. I just wanted to kind of ask you, did you remember that's where the season started? And two, do you feel like it's a season then that works even if you didn't, you know, say watch The Defenders?
So I'll start with your first question. I did not remember that this came right after The Defenders, but I have seen all of the Netflix shows in this universe. And I knew that this season happened after we had seen Jessica Jones and Luke Cage. So I remembered that at least. But I think that this does a good job, and so do the other individual heroes shows, of standing on their own. I think that the writing is done well enough where it makes sense for them to be able to overlap, but there's not so much mention of the others in each show to where you wouldn't understand what's happening if you hadn't watched the others or if you hadn't watched Defenders. So I hope that explains it.
Yeah, no, I think that's excellent. I agree with you. I think one of the things that this kind of Netflix Marvel universe that they created, which is tangentially connected with the overall MCU, even though they don't reference that too much. Mm-hmm. They do a great job as well of allowing, I think, each of these shows to feel comfortable in and of themselves, in the sense that you don't feel like you have had to watch everything. You know, this season, honestly, even just with the way it starts, you know, for Matt waking up and, you know, realizing that he had almost died, I think it plays really well. You know, I haven't seen it, the Defenders, since it came out, and we covered it here on the show. So that's my familiarity with that is, you know, what, probably 8 years ago when that came out. And so that's, I think, something that the show just does a great job of. But I wanted to ask you about this because, you know, we're, with us going back to this Netflix Marvel universe, obviously this is before Disney Plus had happened, and you know, Marvel was kind of exploring what they were going to do on television in general. You know, you had Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. over on ABC, and then Netflix had these, you know, very gritty, grounded reality shows. You felt like you're a whole different universe almost, just because of how grounded these shows are. I mean, there is the supernatural, you know, there is all that kind of stuff. But I wanted to ask you then just how you felt like now that we have this retrospective, and especially since these characters and their legacy is really about to return in the MCU. We've got the new Daredevil show that's going to come out. And they're talking about doing a Punisher special presentation. How do you feel like this ended up working on Netflix? Is Marvel kind of gave them their own little corner of the MCU to play with, which is really opposed to what we have now, right? Where all of Disney Plus shows are so wrapped up into everything else that's happening.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I felt like this was something back when all of these shows first started on Netflix that I was skeptical about. And the more that I dug into them, the more I was so impressed with how all of them, except for Iron Fist, were done and felt so realistic, even though they had supernatural elements. And really, especially with Daredevil, was less supernatural than the others. Because, I mean, he, although he is blind and has all of these incredible heightened senses, it still seems plausible. It's not like he's a superhero like Thor or, you know, well, that's a demigod, but you get what I mean. He doesn't have superpowers. Yeah. And so he's there more as someone that's relatable, I think, more so than some of the others. So I like that we're seeing it in a different light, because obviously before this Daredevil, the only Daredevil I had seen was the Ben Affleck one.
Right. Yes.
Which is not impressive. And Charlie Cox really became this character, and I think does such an incredible job with playing a character who is a blind man, even though he's not a blind man himself. He actually was given awards for it.
Yes. Yeah.
So, yeah, I was impressed, and I was kind of sad when I found out that the series was canceled.
You know, what I think is most interesting about looking back at this experiment that Marvel did with Netflix is just how well it holds up. And I think a big part of that is because they didn't have to feel like this needed to connect so heavily into everything else, you know, in the same way as if you come into just about any of the Disney Plus shows that you've done, if you're not familiar with most of the MCU, you know, things aren't going to make a lot of sense for you. I mean, mm-hmm. You're not going to watch Hawkeye. I love Hawkeye. I think it was one of the best ones they did. I really enjoyed that series. But to get the most out of that, you really have to have followed that story for Clint Barton to really get that. You have to have known the story of Yelena and what happened, you know, with Black Widow and all that. I mean, you know, and almost every single one of the shows is like that. Whereas the beauty of these shows and specifically just the characters themselves, you know, you could have just been a Jessica Jones fan and watched all the Jessica Jones series, and you wouldn't necessarily have really missed out on anything if you didn't watch Daredevil or Iron Fist or Luke Cage or even The Defenders, right?
Right.
Mm-hmm. And so there's something really nice about that. And yet, at the same time, the way in which all of these series actually play together and do have some building blocks for each other, you have very clear and concise stories for each of these characters. And then I think the thing that on top of that made this so great, and I think the experiment was a huge success, because the seriousness of these shows and the seriousness which they take their heroes is something that is missing from a lot of the Marvel Cinematic Universe, where things can be so overly silly and, you know, kind of ridiculous. And so there was just something about these that I think really grounded, really well done, and for me personally, very much enjoyed. You know, like you, I didn't love Iron Fist, you know, season one. Season two was way better, and I thought he was great in the Defender show. Personally, I really enjoyed that. But, you know, as per the Daredevil stuff, I mean, goodness, it's great. I mean, and so it's very interesting kind of looking in retrospective now to see, and especially since we can compare it to the stuff we get on Disney Plus. Yeah, there's just a really big difference, honestly, you know, between what we're getting now and what we were getting then, you know. And so anytime we talk about a season of a show, it's always difficult, you know. These seasons too, there's 13 episodes for the Daredevil show, so that's a lot of material, and there's a lot that happens in this season. So the way we're going to kind of break this down for y'all, and if we don't talk about the favorite thing for you for the series, you know, please write us, let us know. We would love to hear from you, because we're not going to be able to cover every single thing that happened, but we've got we're going to cover the different stories for the different main characters. And, you know, obviously, I think it's important for us to start with for the story for Matt. And, you know, obviously, he comes into this season almost dead. And in many ways, this whole season is about rebuilding him in a very slow, methodical fashion, because he is then juxtaposed against these other characters like Karen or Fisk or Poindexter, where all the thematic elements for those characters are all playing together because they can all kind of make, you know, similar choices to one another, and they could all end up turning into one another if they're not careful. So I just love the way in which this season really breaks down for Matt. It's like we're going to strip the character down, and then we're going to build him back up again.
Yeah, I think that you hit the nail on the head that he really is at a turning point. He's realized that he's suddenly feeling lost and has to literally, like you're just saying, that he's got to go back to basics and start over and redetermine what he believes. He has to decide if he wants to continue to be the guy that he thought he was, or if he's now in a place where he's doubting everything he thought to be true.
Yeah.
And so I do love how they have that conversation, especially in the early part of this season with him and Father Lantum, about kind of sussing that out. And then also with the nun, I don't remember her name, but who, you know, is also playing a big part in his life, to help him get back to who he used to be. And I think that's the big thing you see play out through this whole season and season three is that he is completely lost because he knows what he thinks at least is going to fix this problem with Fisk. And that is that he thinks killing him is the answer, but also is still struggling with the fact that he is ultimately a good person, a moral person. And, you know, kind of in a funny way, like it or not, he turns out to be a religious person, even though he seems at first like he's completely doubting that.
Yes. I mean, you know, that's one of those things, too. It's a huge part of the comics, you know, his struggle with his faith and the fact that, you know, he is Catholic. And so for Matt, you know, one of the struggles that he fights against, like you were saying, especially in this season, which is, am I going to abandon all of that? Am I going to abandon my belief in God because I feel like he's abandoned me? And and then the ultimate, which is, am I going to take the power of God into my hands and decide whether or not somebody lives or dies? I think that's, you know, it's incredibly powerful story. And you know, one of the things that we get in this season, and you just mentioned, I loved, you know, we learn about his parents, right? We learn about his father, who is a boxer, who wouldn't go down in a fight and is killed for it because he refused to not stand up like a man and fight the fair fight, right? Fight with all he could, and he won instead of lost. And then, of course, you know, we learn about the story with his mother, sister Maggie, and we learn that, you know, she met his dad when she was about to be, you know, brought in as a nun, and right before that happened, you know, they get together, they have a child, and she runs into postpartum depression, which is terrible for her. They don't really know about it at that point. And what she thinks is that she's, you know, abandoning God. And so she ends up leaving the family. And it's so fascinating because, you know, I think one of the beauties that I love here, and one of the most beautiful parts of this story is at the end, when Matt is talking to his mother and he says, if you hadn't done what you did, Dad didn't do what he did, I wouldn't be who I am today. And to be able to look her in the eyes and to forgive her and to say, I believe that I'm the person I am today because of the adversity that I faced in my life. And I wouldn't be who I am, specifically, I wouldn't be Daredevil if all of these things hadn't happened. And that God had a plan, and I am living proof of that plan. And I think the beauty of that is because it's not just saying, oh, well, everything turned out great, right? It's also the fact that, you know, Matt had to also continue to make the right choices, even when it was incredibly difficult to do so, and to find ways to get through what he went through. And the season shows us continually how he could easily be Poindexter, how he could easily be Fisk, how he could easily, you know, maybe gone down the same self-destructive road that Karen took for a while in her life, right? And so I just think that there's such a beauty in the story for Matt, and I got a pretty teary-eyed when we got to that scene because there's such character development, not only just for this season, but when you think about the other two seasons then of Daredevil.
So, yes, I absolutely felt the same, that, you know, you can tell in that moment when especially Matt is standing there and has his hands on Fisk's head and Vanessa is watching and he just has to yell because he knows that it's not the right answer ultimately and he just can't follow through with it. But he wants to take care of the problem once and for all by killing him.
Yeah.
And he ultimately just has to let go and make a deal with him that he knows he made an offer he couldn't refuse.
It's awesome.
Yeah.
Well, and I love the way that you said that too, because the whole aspect of this is the way in which, and again, I think specifically with Fisk and specifically with Poindexter, you know, we can see that their life choices of being willing to kill people, how that clearly made a difference in who they are, and that each time it just got easier and easier. And so, you know, for Matt, it's like this would break who he is. And so not only would he lose himself and he would lose, you know, his faith, but he would be kind of unrecognizable after a while, because I think he would just continue to rationalize then, well, this is the best way to make this happen. This is the easiest way to make this happen. And I really appreciate that, you know, he has to then trust that I can't basically be the law. We've got to put this in the hands of the system. And in fact, too, you know, by not killing him, this will give us the opportunity to be able to drain the swamp, basically, of the FBI and all of the corrupt officials that, you know, Fisk had in his pocket. And you can't do that if you just kill him and everybody's able to hide.
So, yes, I mean, you are not going to ultimately fix anything by killing Fisk, is what he realizes, even though all of us are on his side and like the dude finds a way out of everything. How are you going to beat him when he's rigged the whole system?
Yeah.
But supposedly we found a loophole.
Well, and I think in some ways that's what makes the storyline, you know, for Foggy so interesting, because, you know, unlike Karen and unlike Matt, you know, he is the one who grew up in a good family. He's the one who, you know, there's such a juxtaposition between him and his friends. And I think that's what makes him really interesting as a character then for them and for the show, is because his storyline here is all about trying to utilize and work inside the system and not give up on the system, realizing that we need the system. We need good people in the system for, you know, our society to function. Otherwise, we are kind of up a creek without a paddle. And I, you know, this the storyline of him deciding that he's going to, you know, run for DA and all of that, I think is just so well done. And again, without him, you know, you don't have that kind of true voice of like just reason between him and Matt and Karen. And so I think it just goes to show just how incredibly important he is then to this series and to those two characters.
Yes. And I think that I like Foggy so much because you kind of have to admire his, I don't want to say naivete, but almost blind faith sometimes in the system.
Yeah, sure.
And Matt and Karen are both trying to say, and every time we've tried to let the system do its job, Fisk found a way to use the system against us. And so then what do you do? But I admire that Foggy is the opinion of, yes, but without the system, there is just chaos.
Right.
I mean, yes. You can't, what is it? Like the phrase, an eye for an eye makes the whole world blind.
Mm-hmm.
You can't solve every problem that way. There has to be a system. Yes. And like you said, there have to be good people that are trustworthy within the system in order for it to work. So having dirty FBI agents didn't help anyone.
Right.
And that's why, thankfully, they found the few people they could trust, like Detective Mahoney. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
To help move things in the right direction.
Yeah. I mean, that's a great point. And I think, you know, on top of that, what it goes to show is how important then character is, right? You know, then that's one of the most interesting points of the show is that you have somebody like Foggy who really does have good character, and that character stands out as opposed to all the other people who truly like are just in this for the money. They're just in this for the power and all of those things. And it, you know, he's also then juxtaposed against even characters like Matt or Fisk who they're so willing to, you know, bend the rules, break the rules, pretend like the rules don't even exist. And I think that's something that's just incredibly beautiful about, you know, Foggy is his character really kind of keeps him from even being one of those. He doesn't like bending the rules. Like he doesn't like breaking the rules. Why? Because he understands the importance of, what it is that we do and why we need people of character in places of power, because, you know, we see in this show how absolute power corrupts absolutely. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's clear in just about every place in this show, especially when we see characters being given, you know, basically absolute power. And it's, you know, utterly terrifying.
You could say that he's a fan of law and order.
You absolutely could. You absolutely could.
Sorry, I had to throw that.
No, I love that. That's great. I think it's also really interesting, too, because it's obviously been a long time since I've seen season one and season two. But you always got the sense that there was, you know, something about Karen that was driving her, and you got hints as to what that was, right? But I really, really loved that we finally unpack her character in this season, and we do it in a way that allows the arc that she's on, you know, to be something that then mirrors somebody like Matt, you know, because she's done the very thing, of course, on accident, but she's done the very thing that Matt is thinking about doing. And she knows the weight and the toll that it is on her, and she knows how it could crush him in the end. And so I love the way in which her story mirrors his story. And I also love then being able to see the fortitude of that character who has found a way to overcome that and work to, you know, make up for what happened, the choices that she made. And I really appreciate that this show does not shy away from just how difficult it can be to continue living and work to make the right choice after a lot of pain and suffering you've caused.
That episode, the Karen episode in this season, I think was the best and the most painful of the whole season, because you're put exactly in her shoes. Like you're there mm-hmm. along for the ride for the whole experience, seeing how she becomes who she is. And these terrible things that you hear of sometimes, even in real life happening in the news, that you think, I can't imagine what that would feel like. And then to top it off, her dad saying, I don't want your help. I want you to leave.
Yeah.
Just truly, I mean, it's like driving another knife in your heart. And you could understand exactly where he's coming from and where she's coming from, but there's nothing that can make it better. And they both just have to find a way to move on from that and either try to repair what they have or live their lives apart and not have a relationship anymore. But man, you feel for her. Because it's like she and her dad and her brother are just trying to get by after already having lost her mom to cancer.
Yeah.
And then this happens. So, and they really make you feel how much her brother is a good person who truly cares about his sister.
Absolutely. Yes.
So, yeah, I think it informs so much about how Karen behaves in the rest of the show. And then I think also, like you said, I love that this is then a mirror for Matt to say, this is what you don't want to be.
Yes.
And yes, I have found a way to move past it, but I'm always going to have that mark on my past.
Mm-hmm.
And kind of how, you know, Matt helps her forgive herself.
Yes.
You know, I love that phrase that I think he even says directly to her, or maybe it was Nadim that said it, but your mistakes don't have to define you.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. I can't remember who says that either, but you're 100% right.
Because it was a mistake. I mean, at the end of the day, she blames herself, but she didn't do it on purpose.
Right.
It was just a horrible accident.
Yeah. You know, one of the things as you were talking and I was kind of thinking, and I had been thinking about this as I was watching the show, and then I just kind of forgot to write it down and it came back to me. So I'm glad that that's the case. But everything you were saying was just reminding me how this whole season, and I think in many ways, just the Daredevil character and his story arc through all three seasons, and then it culminates in this season, right? Which is almost every single person here is harmed because of the lies that we tell. The lies we tell ourselves, the lies we tell each other, the truth that's not spoken.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, you know, when you think of like Karen's story, there are truths that will not be spoken in that family because we don't talk about those things. And those truths end up hurting everyone in the family, right? You know, because the dad won't deal with reality, the kind of the lie he's telling himself is, no, they're going to be fine. They're going to be able to make it work. You know, they're going to be able to, it doesn't help, right? It hurts everyone around him. Karen's lies of basically like telling herself what she's doing isn't hurting anybody else other than her,
mm-hmm.
right? That it doesn't really matter what she does as long as she's not hurting anyone. Well, of course, then she hurts somebody. And it's the same thing then we see for all the other characters. The lies that Matt tells himself, but the lies that he's also told, right? Mm-hmm. Specifically by those around him. And then, you know, you get specifically this, then you get, of course, the story with Poindexter, where it's also the same thing, where it's like, you know, the therapist never really truly being honest with him that there's something seriously wrong with you, you know,
right.
And dealing with that reality, you know, it helps no one in the end. And so there's something so interesting about that, and I think it really does come to life in all the storylines, but as you're speaking, it's like it really comes to life with the Karen story because those lies really do have a huge impact on our family because the truth can't be spoken, and it really comes to bring to light that whole idea, and you know, with Matt being Catholic, like, the truth will set you free, The truth can hurt, but it also creates freedom. And everybody's lies here kind of end up creating shackles that people either know they're wearing or maybe they don't even know they're wearing until the truth comes out and they find a way to finally break free. And yeah. I found that really fascinating in all the stories that we get.
I'm glad you said that, because I remember specifically that was the issue that Seema had with her husband, Nadim.
Exactly.
Where she was like, you've irreparably broken our marriage because you lied to my face over and over again about something that was literally life or death.
Yes.
Like, it wasn't like a little thing.
Yep.
So she's like, I don't know that I can trust you, or I don't know how to trust you anymore, that you keep your promises, that you are going to keep us safe, that you care utmost about your son's safety. You know, I like that she added, she was like, you know, you brought a gunfight to our house.
Yes.
And I was actually praying that they would kill our son first so he didn't have to see it happen to me.
Yeah.
That was heavy.
Yeah.
And so it's like, yeah, this is what your lies have done to us.
Mm-hmm. Excellent point. And what makes that so fascinating then is that the storyline for Fisk here is that he's able to utilize all of those lies to keep people under his thumb.
Mm-hmm.
Right? All of the people that he ends up controlling, is there's something in their life that they don't want in the light, and they're willing to serve him to make sure it stays in the dark.
Mm-hmm.
And so in that, what he's using is people's weaknesses. He's torturing broken people, and he is utilizing the lies we tell ourselves and others to control people. And, you know, case in point, Dex, right? And then, of course, everybody in the FBI that he turns into his puppets.
Yep.
And that is really, really interesting. And the storyline then for him is so fascinating because, you know, he has some dynamism to him as a character, because he's not just a one-note character, right?
Mm-hmm.
With his love for Vanessa and everything. But what's fascinating in the end is he's doing everything out of that sense of his own sense of inadequacy, right? His own sense that he can't live up in everybody's eyes. I mean, what is the thing that he says to Vanessa, which is, I look at you and I think to myself, am I good enough for her? Right.
Mm-hmm.
And so because he cares so much about what people think of him, it drives him completely. And it drives him in the end as well to be able to be defeated too, because there's something he can't face in himself. What he can't face in himself is that the person that he believes that he loves, he can't let her down in any way. And two, I mean, he's also a psychopath. She turns out to be a psychopath too. Mm-hmm. And isn't it amazing what happens when you put two psychopaths together? It gets crazy.
Well, three if you count Dex.
Yeah, that's true. That's an unholy trinity right there.
Yeah. Well, and I just wanted to add too that I think they show this fascinating other like sub commentary on mental health and how there is a fine line between mental health issues and people that are broken. Like, it, you know, the difference between having depression versus being an axe murderer.
Psychotic.
Yeah. There's a big difference there. It's a big divide.
Yeah.
And so showing that these people are not just disturbed, like they are forever broken people that don't know the difference between right and wrong. Or even if they do, they don't care. And that you do feel sorry for Dex, because it's clear that something really malfunctioned with him when he was a child, and same mm-hmm. for Fisk.
Yeah.
But it turned into something dark and terrible.
Yeah. Yeah.
That led to so many other people being hurt.
Yeah. Well, and that is a fascinating thing too, because when you think about the story for Fisk, you think about the story for Dex, and then you look at Matt, you know, there's somebody who took an interest in him and showed him another way. And, you know, I think that's where his faith came in. That's where Stick comes in, you mm-hmm. know, and those two things help him then channel all of that in a more constructive way. And then, of course, too, I mean, you know, with his relationship with Foggy, where, you know, they want to then help people through their law office and all of that. So I think there's something, you know, there's something really beautiful in that. And it does go to show the ways in which that, you know, we can either be the worst thing that's ever happened to somebody because we'll help perpetuate their lies to them, or we can be the best thing to somebody and we can help them deal with reality and help them move forward. Even though you get Father Lantom not telling Matt the truth about his mother, you do get him kind of helping him understand the truth of, like, the world, his situation as being somebody who's blind, and helping him work through those issues, right? Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, it's something that's really interesting. And the beauty of this, I think, this season is just how well constructed it is, so that every moment of every episode, we're tying in the different storylines for all the different characters we kind of mentioned earlier, so that they all help you see, you know, when you switch from Matt to Karen to Foggy to Fisk, you know, to Dex, all of these stories are helping you understand different facets of all of the characters, because the way in which the thematic elements are structured, each one is kind of shining a different light on those, mm-hmm. which to me is really tight story writing, and truly people who understand what they're trying to do with these characters. They understand the characters that they're trying to get across, and then they're doing it in a way that just works together really perfectly. And, you know, there are times, I think, when these seasons on Netflix for Marvel, some of the series, you're like, I don't think we needed, like, two of the episodes here.
Mm-hmm.
And rewatching this season, that's a question I have for you. Did you ever feel that there was a point where it's like, okay, I could see how we could edit some of this down and we could, you know, maybe have made this season a little shorter? Or did you feel like, no, I think we actually needed all 13 episodes and it felt like I didn't have too much or too little? It was like the Goldilocks of shows.
I'm somewhere in the middle, actually. I think, well, no, more like 80-20. I think it was 80% well done and not much I would change as far as that goes. But 20%, I did think, for example, in the episode about Dex's backstory, it went a little long. So there could have been some editing down there and maybe in a couple other places. But overall, I think you do need all 13 episodes, and that it doesn't feel too long in that otherwise. I think that it obviously has some really great moments that are more emotional than others, but I will say that there was one point that kind of took me out of it. I don't know if you noticed in the fight scene where they're fighting in Fisk's apartment between Matt and Dex. He, Dex throws some things at Daredevil. I'm sorry, at Matt, and he blocks them in sort of a wax on, wax off motion.
Oh, yeah.
It just looked silly.
Yeah. I think, like, I definitely see what you're saying. I think you picked out the spot that I would have thought as well, which is, the one storyline that felt like maybe we could have tightened it up just a little bit was the one with Dex. And yet, mm-hmm. at the same time, I think, it's not like it really bothers me that much, you know, and it didn't sound like it's like really bothered you too much, you know, because I think they pay it off in the end in a way that is good enough, which is great. I think this is one of the tightest of the series that they did, and I think it really works. So, I wanted to ask you about, you know we have more to come with Daredevil Born Again coming out, and they kind of completely reworked that show to be more in line with everything that happened in the Netflix shows. You know, they brought back in Karen and Foggy, and Fisk is back, and then Dex is going to be back. And so there's I want to know then kind of how you feel about that series coming out, if it's something that you're excited about, you know, if you're also glad that they didn't, you know, screw it up and kind of go the route where, we just, we're going to basically She-Hulk this thing.
So I will say, although I was originally sad when I found out there wouldn't be any new seasons of Daredevil coming out, I did feel like it was okay to leave it where it was left.
Yeah.
So at the time it felt unfinished, but now looking back and, you know, doing the rewatch, I feel like you could leave it there and that would feel like a good natural place to stop. Mm-hmm. So I'm cautiously optimistic about this. I definitely think it's interesting the way they had left it open-ended for Dex to come back as Bullseye. But I didn't ever read the Daredevil comics and didn't know until I looked into it more that that's who he was supposed to be.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I'm, like I said, cautiously optimistic, excited to see some of these characters come back, but I don't want it to be forced.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
How did you feel?
I'm definitely glad that we are going to be bringing back all these characters, and we're going to be doing it by not negating everything that actually happened in the series. You know, I think that's really smart. I think it would have been stupid. The thing about this show is like, you can't do this show, and you can't do these characters without doing it with Foggy and doing it with, Karen. Mm-hmm. You know, they're an indelible part of this show. I mean, it doesn't even compute to me to have them in this, you know, have this a series without them. It just doesn't make any sense to me. And so, like, I'm glad that they're doing that. I hope that it's good. I've also read that it seems as though the show might be one that doesn't have just one season or two seasons, but maybe continues. So they're thinking as of this maybe more in line of like, this is a TV show, you know, that could continue for many seasons. And so, yeah, I'm really looking forward to this. And I'm excited to see, you know, what happens. And so, and I am glad, at least, you know, in some ways, like, I would have absolutely come into, you know, Daredevil Born Again and maybe not even watched it if they weren't going to bring in the other characters. And also, they were just going to basically negate this show. I just don't think that would have worked at all. And so right. I'm really glad that they didn't do that. And so, well, I'm really interested, Christy, then where you're going to come down on the rating scale for Daredevil season 3.
So one thing I did also realize that I want to add before I give my rating to is I made a slight mistake earlier saying that Daredevil didn't have superpowers. He does. And I realized that. I just meant that he feels more relatable than the others.
Yeah.
I just want to make that clear. But I will say, as far as this season, especially rewatching it, remembered how blown away I was the first time that I saw this in 2018 when it came out, because I remember as soon as it was available, we watched it. And then watching it again, it's so dramatic and immersive. Mm-hmm. And I've always loved the intro to this show, especially.
Yeah.
And I think that it's well shot. I think that there is definitely something to be said for this show, as well as the other Netflix shows like this, for the thought behind how they're shot and the lighting and the fight scenes feeling so grounded.
Yeah.
And some of those fight scenes are painful.
Yeah.
Talk about grounded.
Yes.
And I think that it also boiled down to having some excellent actors that could get this across. And I think Charlie Cox has made himself a household name just because of this show. Like, if you had never seen Stardust.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree.
You knew about him after Daredevil. But Vincent D'Onofrio, I mean, I'm terrified of him and I've never met the guy.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Because he's so convincing. So I just wanted to throw that in as something that I thought was so impressive, especially about this season. And feeling like it was a good natural place to leave things.
Yeah.
But so impactful and memorable.
Mm-hmm.
Even being almost 7 years ago, it doesn't feel like it's been that long.
Yeah.
So
it's crazy.
Yeah, I was incredibly impressed. Although there's a couple tweaks I might make, I would give it a 4.5 out of 5.
Nice.
Glass crystals from the wall sconce.
Nice. Yes. Yes. That's awesome. Yeah. I mean, I watching this again and I think really reliving just how good this show is. And I think too, what I really come down to is it's how well paced the season is. It's how the storytelling comes about in the season. It's the way in which the season comes together. It's the way the story elements are all told. It's the way the thematic elements play together. All of this, I think, is just fantastic. And so I'm going to give this 5 out of 5. 5 out of 5 beers with Foggy.
There you go.
It's so good. It really is. Like, I was just reminded of how good this was. And again, this is something I just kind of wish, you know, that Marvel felt more like these days, you know, and even when all of these shows weren't the best, you know, everybody behind the scenes and in front of the camera was giving everything their all. And so, yeah, great stuff. But Christy, if people wanted to catch up with you, see what else you've got going on these days, where would they find you?
Well, you can find me on Instagram and Twitter at Bespin Bell, and then also on Letterboxd and occasionally on Facebook. And then I have a finished show that I did with my friends Amanda and Teresa called Sabers and Spells over on the Skywalking Through Neverland Network. And what about you?
You could find me all over social media if I'm on that platform with the name Matt Refuser 2. course, here on the network, you'll find me with a whole bunch of other shows talking Star Trek with Chris Jones. So check those out. You can also find me over on the Nerd Party Network doing a couple of shows. One's completed. It's called Outpost, talking about every single chapter of the Harry Potter series. And then you'll find me over on Aggressive Negotiations with John Mills as we talk about Star Wars each and every week. But thank you so much for joining us.
And y'all come back now you hear. Mm-hmm.